Welcome to Conversations Different, a podcast of the Santa Fe New Mexican, where we discuss the interesting issues and people of Northern New Mexico. This week, the topic is sustainability, sustainable growth, housing, and with us is Johanna Gilligan, Chief External Affairs Officer with HomeWise. That's the group that helps individuals achieve their goal of owning a home. She's going to be talking with us about an important speaker series happening now, focusing on the future of Santa Fe. Johanna, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Inez.
Before we get started, why don't you talk a little bit about what HomeWise does in our community? Because it wears a lot of hats.
Sure thing. HomeWise started in Santa Fe over 37 years ago with the intention to help families stay in Santa Fe. So we have developed a full service model that helps particularly low and moderate income residents become homeowners. And we do that by providing free financial education to help people become ready to buy a home, down payment assistance, real estate services. We have realtors who are on salary rather than commission that help our clients find a home they can afford and that they love. And then we can provide down payment assistance as a part of their loan. So for income qualifying residents, they can borrow money at 0% interest the way I did from my parents when I was able to buy a home. And they pay that off when they sell the home, which creates an evergreen fund of capital for us to help more people. We also do development because for a long time in Santa Fe, there's been a dearth of starter homes and lower cost homes in the market. So we build homes, we build mixed income and mixed use communities. We also do home improvement lending and have launched a community development department, which brings the commercial components to projects that are mixed use. And so a part of our work in community development and community engagement has been this educational series called the Livability Speaker Series.
Okay, that is a lot. I remember when they were campaigning for the so-called mansion tax, they took us to, I think it's called Escondido.
Yes.
Or whatever. And that is an incredible development because it's got the big houses where you can still work in the back. Then it has the work-live spaces. And yep. Soon it's going to have that wonderful new restaurant.
Yes. Yeah. We're so thrilled. Yes. That's our first mixed use project in Santa Fe. The project is called El Camino Crossing.
Okay.
And as you mentioned, it includes single family homes, but all of them have the option to have a casita in the back that you can use as a rental or a home office. Also condos and live work units and our first commercial project, which is going to be an incredible restaurant called Escondido that will be opening this summer.
Yep, I knew there was an Escondido in there.
Yes, you got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I kept thinking, man, if I didn't have as much stuff, I could live in one. I love those little, and the way you open the door.
The garage door.
Yeah. That was the coolest thing. Yeah, it was nice. Now, by the time this airs, this is the second year you're doing the Livability speaker series. But by the time this airs, your first speaker, Jerusalem Demses of The Atlantic Magazine, is going to have spoken. So why don't you share a little bit about what she was going to talk about? Because, I mean, land use policies does not sound sexy.
Yes.
But she makes it pretty fascinating.
That's right. I know land use does sound so dry, and yet it dictates so much of how we experience the world and the places we live. So Jerusalem Demses is a staff writer for The Atlantic. She writes on housing and the economy, and she's become an incredibly important voice talking about the factors that have made cities unaffordable, particularly blue cities. So she talks often about how zoning is unintentionally limiting the ability to create the kind of cities that we want, whether that means it's limiting our ability to build more affordable housing or it's limiting our ability to build communities that are more sustainable because they're more dense, they're more mixed in their uses, they create more opportunities for transit and connectivity.
Well, talk about some of the policies. I would imagine like lot size is a thing, parking requirements.
That's right.
The whole idea of single family residence is probably an idea whose time might have passed.
Yep.
You know, those kinds of things. Yet, in a town like Santa Fe, where people come here because, you know, it's charming, it's by the mountains, blah, 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 there's this nostalgia for a past that probably didn't exist, and everyone resists everything almost.
Yeah, I think Jerusalem talks about the desire to preserve communities in amber and how it is impossible to do that. And instead, what we end up doing is stopping development in one part of town that leads often to sprawl development in another part of town. And I think we've seen a real history of that in Santa Fe. We are lucky to live in such an old city, and we're lucky to have a part of our city that is a pre-car kind of built environment. And so I think it's been really important to protect that. But I think what we've done that has not been as forward thinking is we've kind of thought that we could stop development. And in fact, development doesn't stop, it just morphs, right? So if it doesn't happen here, it happens there. Or if it doesn't happen at all, then you just get the kind of inaffordability issues that have caused, in our case, thousands of people to migrate out of the city, lower income residents, to Rio Rancho or to Albuquerque, where they might be able to buy a home they could afford or something like that.
Yeah, and it's not even really lower income residents
That's right.
anymore.
That's right.
It's like, you know, teachers yes. and nurses and even, you know, like doctors who are doing
right.
public health doctoring, you
That's
know,
right.
kind of thing. And it's fascinating to me that we want a city that's vibrant and interesting, and we're basically telling young people, well, you have to live with your mom until you're 100.
Yeah. No, that's right. And I think that, you know, zoning and land use policies are kind of the hidden rules that create these housing patterns. You know, for example, referring to like the single family home, a vast majority of Santa Fe is zoned for single family, which means that as a developer, if we are to buy a piece of land that we want to build on, we can only build single family homes unless we go for a rezone process, which often ends up in a lot of people pushing back on that
right.
because they might not want, you know, for example, two-story condos or something like that.
That's
next
right.
to them.
And God forbid there be a park where children will play. South Meadows.
The sounds of children can just be so taxing.
It is. It's hard. We want our quiet lot. Oh, goodness. That was so South Meadows, for listeners who did not follow every housing development fight, was 80 homes.
It's actually going to be 160.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But 80 of them are affordable.
That's right.
Like 50%. Actually,
that's
50%.
Exactly right.
That's right. So 160 home development that was going to be in a basically a vacant lot that was very beloved by neighbors around
that's
it.
That's right.
And they didn't want the traffic, et cetera, and all the things that you get with.
That's right. And you know, I was just listening. Jerusalem Demsis had a great interview with Ezra Klein on his podcast a week or so ago. And she said one of the things she said that was really interesting there was that often you'll see a kind of contradictory nature in us, in people, in voters, where at the state level, for example, they'll support affordable housing initiatives or they'll support a governor who has an affordable housing platform. But when it comes to engagement at the local level, you know, be it like a development right next to you, people will often oppose it.
Right.
And so I think that those are the contradictions that we're trying to surface and say, if we want affordable housing, we need to say we're good with affordable housing anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, we
yeah.
can't have a project by project based decision making process because it ends up, you know, just diminishing access everywhere.
Right. And it limits kind of your opportunities because land is a finite resource.
That's right.
So if you have a big empty lot that you can put places to live for people.
That's right.
Then if you don't use it, then where will they go?
That's right. And to your previous comment, Inez, about how we're creating a city that, you know, first of all, people need to live with their parents forever. Secondly, you know, younger people want vibrancy, they want livability. You know, that often means a mix of uses. That means being able to walk somewhere. That means, you know, a kind of a little bit more of an urban environment. And we don't have to have that everywhere, but I really do think we need to allow for that in the places where it makes sense, where you can hop on a bus and get downtown. Like, we should be building in a denser land use pattern. So that's why we called it the Livability Speaker Series, because we really are thinking about this broad set of issues that fall under land use and how our decisions are either moving us closer to a livable Santa Fe or further away.
Yeah, that makes a great point to take a break. We'll be back soon with Conversations Different.
Thanks, Inez. This is Patrick Dorsey, publisher of the Santa Fe New Mexican. We hope you're enjoying this episode of Conversations Different with Inez Russell Gomez. Great local content is only possible with a talented staff dedicated to bringing you the best local content possible. For that staff to do its work, we need your support by subscribing to the Santa Fe New Mexican. If you're already a subscriber, thank you. And if not, there's never been a better time to subscribe. In addition to our home-delivered newspaper that comes with full digital access, we also provide digital-only subscriptions for SantaFeNewMexican.com. We'll also be releasing more online-only audio and video programming moving forward. The Santa Fe New Mexican has been here for nearly 175 years, and we want to continue being your source for local news and information. Visit us at SantaFeNewMexican.com/subscribe or call us at 505-986-3010. Thank you.
It's a new day in New Mexico, and the doors to boundless opportunity are open as tens of thousands of New Mexicans reach higher to pursue a dream, broaden their horizons, and retrain for a better job. With the New Mexico Lottery and Opportunity Scholarships, you could build yourself a better future anywhere in the state. You put in the hard work, we'll help with the costs. For eligibility details, visit reachhighernm.com.
We are back with Conversations Different and Johanna from HomeWise. And I want to make one quick note before we leave. One of the things that I know our owner, Robin Martin, would be interested to learn more about in your livability series is how we can reduce the size of parking lots and parking requirements and maybe change our streetscapes into something that's actually attractive.
We love talking about parking. Last year, we brought an author named Henry Grabar, who wrote a really great book called Paved Paradise, How Parking Explains the World. I really recommend anyone who hasn't read it yet. It's the most interesting, insightful, and funny take on parking. And I definitely think parking is such a huge and often unconsidered factor in land use. You know, I didn't even really start thinking about it this way, but it is kind of odd to imagine that we have the government telling us how many parking spaces we need based upon use. You know, so if it's a dentist's office, it's this much. If it's a restaurant, it's that much. And yet when you drive around everywhere, mostly what we see, I can't remember the last time outside of downtown I saw a full parking lot.
Right. Or maybe the mall at Christmas.
And exactly.
And you're That's planning right. your lot for the
exactly
Black Friday.
Exactly.
And yeah. And now we're in climate change. We're getting
right.
hotter, so we have asphalt.
That's right.
I mean, they don't even require like painting the parking lots a light
right.
color,
no.
which they're doing now in California and changing the materials they're using. No, we're just going to heat up the
just
world.
Just more black surface area. Exactly. Yeah, so I think parking is definitely, it's such a, the upside is that parking is a great opportunity. Changing parking codes could make affordable housing much easier, for example. I mean, the construction costs not just a surface lot, but if you're doing a parking structure, it's minimum like $30,000 per parking space these days. So it's a very significant cost. And it also opens up a lot of opportunity if we change our parking structure, parking minimums, to think about how we might absorb some of those parking lots and use them for housing.
That's right. And if you aren't providing as many spaces for cars, perhaps people then will choose to ride
That's
their
right.
bicycles or take a bus. So you kind of change the whole dynamic.
That's right. We've been getting really excited about improving connectivity as a developer. So we're, adding this park to the Los Prados project that we're building that's going to be alongside the Acequia Trail extension. But we're also starting to get involved in places where we can help with connectivity. So we just helped connect the Acequia Trail at Mays Road to Dos Hermanos Park, which is super exciting. That's going to be a new way for people to walk or bike, for example, to Escondido from Casa Alegre and yep. other neighborhoods nearby when it opens this summer. And I think you really do have to get all these things going in tandem. You need to improve your biking access, but at the same time, you need to make it harder to park. Yeah, you need to make it harder to drive so that more people will start to choose alternatives.
Yeah, even if they just carpool, that
That's
would
right.
make a huge difference.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that strikes me about biking in Santa Fe is that cars do not like to ride with bikes.
I That's mean, right.
And I know I get annoyed if I get behind a slow bike because I want them to be in their own space.
Yep.
And I'm happy to share the road, but that means you move over
right.
and let me go through.
Right.
And I know that's not the way it's supposed to be, but I'm very careful. I don't go close to them or anything else because I don't want to hurt anybody or, but the roads are not
yeah.
clear. They're
That's right.
dangerous. And it's like, how do you expect people to bike when they could die at any moment?
That's right. No, we have made for, I think it's both infrastructure and then it's kind of culture that shaped the experience for bikers and walkers. It's
yep.
like, how safe do you feel because you're in a protected lane, but then also how are drivers treating you? And that really varies. And I lived in Cambridge for a year, and if I set foot in a street, the cars around me would stop, And
yes.
that's because that's how the rules are enforced. But this year, the closing speaker of the Livability Speaker Series is going to be Jeff Speck, who wrote a book called Walkable
The Walkable City?
Yes, yep. That's it. The Walkable City came out a while ago, but it's been a really, really important book for thinking about how to make cities more walkable. So we're excited to continue this conversation about connectivity and parking and walkability with Jeff closing us out this year. I think there's just huge opportunities on the horizon as we update the land use code to think about how we can incentivize, you know, multimodal transit. The other thing that's exciting right now is that e-bikes are becoming more and more popular, and Santa Fe really is a scale of a city that you could commute, you know, from downtown to parts of the South Side or vice versa on an e-bike. My boss, Mike Lofton, got an e-bike and often comes from the east side to our office on Siler Road by bike. So, you know, I think it's hard to get away from an entirely, like a car-free lifestyle here, I think is really challenging. But going down to one car per household, I think is becoming increasingly easier.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to look at it. Because think about if you don't have to have all your cars parked in the street, then people could walk.
That's right.
You know, or at least you wouldn't be worried about someone dinging your paint.
Yes, that's right.
Have an advantage. Now, the next speaker that's coming on June 20th, I believe, by the time this airs, is, I think, really topical for Santa Fe because the topic is homelessness is not a housing project.
Yep.
Homelessness is a housing problem.
Exactly.
Is the topic. And I know everyone that I talk to basically and writes letters will say, no, it's because they're on drugs and they're mentally ill, blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
But that's not it.
Yeah, we're really excited to bring Greg Coburn to town. He's been a great voice, author, as you said, of homelessness is a housing problem. And, you know, I think that it's been really disheartening to see the rise in homelessness in Santa Fe. Having grown up here, it's really shocking to think about what it was like when I was a kid in the 80s versus what it's like now. And I have so much compassion for people who are living unhoused. It's can't even imagine how stressful that is. And yet it also is obviously stressful for neighbors. I was riding my bike to work the other day and someone, you know, had just had a negative interaction with an unhoused person. And so it's what we might call a wicked problem. But I think what Greg Coburn is going to really help us understand is that people may be suffering from a myriad of issues when they are unhoused, including substance use disorder, including mental health issues. But fundamentally, if we don't have housing that people can afford, then what's going to happen is we are going to see more and more people living on the street.
No. And I was talking recently to someone who just became homeless. It was a really unfortunate series of events. And his response was, I don't use drugs, I don't drink, but I may start.
Yeah.
Because the shock of being without a place to go, without a routine, without a bathroom is horrible. It's just,
I mean, I can't imagine trying to be sober and living on the streets. I mean, which is not to say that there's, you know, there's just clearly the fentanyl epidemic is just tearing people and communities apart. And I think we really need to come at this from a mental health issue as well. But I think understanding the fundamental economics of how housing markets change and how that affects homelessness is really important. Because if we are misdiagnosing the problem or if we're only diagnosing a part of the problem, then we can't get the right solutions in place.
And I think that, you know, as important as the shelters are to Santa Fe, whether St. E's or the Interfaith Shelter, when you look at a crisis shelter and you're checking in a guest and you see that they've been there for 10 years, it's not a crisis anymore.
That's
It's a routine. It's a way of being. So how are we doing to move that person to a different way of living?
Yeah, and part of what inspired us to bring Greg Coburn to town was talking with a lot of the leaders of different housing service providers and hearing from them that they had sometimes upwards of 30 clients that had rapid rehousing vouchers or other housing, you know, assistance. So they were ready to go, could move in, and could not find a single place to accept their housing vouchers.
Yeah. No, I overheard a conversation. I work on Saturdays as a check-in person at Pete's, and this person got a voucher and it wasn't maybe going to cover Española. That's how severe the problem has gotten. And you think about if you can't find a place to live, what do you do?
I mean, you're stuck. And as a person trying to help people who are living on the streets, like you see they get this golden ticket and still there's no way out. Like, I can't imagine how hard it is to keep hoping that you can help people in that kind of a situation.
No. And at the same time, if you just bought
of $300,000 or $400,000, $500,000 house on Harrison Road, you have a right to park and go to sleep without facing drug needles or human waste. Yeah. I mean, it goes back and forth.
It really is an issue that has a lot of victims, and I think is something that is going to increasingly require a lot of deep thought and community action and civic action to make sure that we're getting
and fast action, faster maybe. Yeah. And on that, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with more Conversations Different.
My name is Maria Jose Rodriguez Cadiz, and I am the Executive Director with Solace Sexual Assault Services. Our mission is to prevent sexual violence and empower survivors of sexual violence through restoring dignity, strength, and resiliency. For almost 51 years, Solace has reduced the impact of sexual violence. We do it by focusing on human rights, social justice, hope, and dignity. We believe survivors are experts in their own experiences and acknowledge that empowering them is crucial to their healing. Our advocacy, forensic interviewing, and therapy services are centered to their needs. Our sexual violence prevention programs in schools and community is just as important. Please check our website at findsolace.org. And if in need, you can call our 24/7 hotline, which is 800-721-7273. Your support is crucial to the lives of survivors. Thank you. Gracias.
We are back with Conversations Different, talking to Johanna Gilligan. One of the things you said earlier made me think, so you grew up here in 1980s. Mm-hmm. What has changed for you?
You know, Santa Fe always, I think Santa Fe is funny because it's both changes so much and so little.
I get that feeling when I do the histories because everyone's complaining about parking on the plaza,
exactly.
The disrespect of outsiders, and exactly. The city not being able to meet its bills.
It's like the more it changes, the more it stays the same. Exactly. You know, I think that there's been a lot of positive changes. These might be in some ways silly, but I think of like there's so much cool stuff that's happened in like arts and culture and placemaking. Like I love the activation of the rail yards and the plaza in the summer. Those music series are amazing. You know, I think there's been a real influx of younger people and people in the middle of their life that have moved here with COVID. And I think that's been great. I think that the housing affordability issues are really hitting kind of crisis levels. I mean, it's just terrible to see the kind of situations that people are living in. And that is both a change and it's not, you know, it's definitely, I feel like something that's been a challenge here as long as I've been alive, but it also does feel new in its severity.
Well, what I remember is when I got here, because I came here in the 80s to work the first time at the New Mexican, and Rodeo Road was the end of the world.
Yes.
And there was an apartment there for $600. And I told my mother, you're crazy. I'm not living. I can't afford that. Yeah. You know, that was too much. So I found a little place off Canyon Road that was like $400. And it included utilities. And I thought, being from Las Vegas, that I was living on the poor side of town because it had a dirt road and was adobe.
Of course.
And everyone was like, how do you afford to live there? And I was like, what are you talking about? And that's when I found out that in Santa Fe, if you live on a dirt road, you're richer. So that was like a huge shock to me. But I only stayed a year and a half or so when I went to graduate school. And literally the rent in Washington, D.C. did not seem appreciably more expensive than Santa Fe.
Wow.
'Cause it was not cheap then.
Yeah.
But at the same time, when our family moved back in 2000 to permanently just be here and not be in Taos anymore, we were able to buy a house.
Yep.
And I wasn't working then. It was only on my husband's salary.
Yep.
And I just can't imagine what it's like now.
No. I mean, honestly, we moved back 6 years ago. We bought our house 4 years ago. I don't know if we could afford our own house today.
Yeah.
You know?
It's couldn't.
That's how fast it's all changed. And I do think that, you know, in a way that's kind of connected to the other thing you're talking about, which is the sprawling like development of the city. That definitely, I remember coming back in my 20s and 30s and just being like, this is crazy. I can't believe Santa Fe just keeps growing past I-25.
Yep.
And, you know, and so we really need to think about how we recreate in a modern sense what we love about the East Side, which is that it is dense.
And it's walkable. And I walk to work from, you know.
I mean, that's such a dream. And I think that younger people, I've lived in a lot of cities, like I love walking places, you know? And so I think we have a lot of opportunity, especially as they're updating the land use code over the next several years, to think about density where it makes sense. And that's going to be another topic that we'll be talking about, which I'm really looking forward to. We're bringing a person named Julie Campoli, who is the author of Visualizing Density. She's going to engage in a conversation about density and design using images. And I think that that's going to be really helpful because we often talk about density in the abstract. And, you know, everyone, you say the word density, everyone has a different image in their mind. Right.
And there's a precise definition.
Yeah, that's right. So talking about different scales of density, what does R7 look like? What does R21 look like? And then thinking about, like, when is it that we don't like density and when is it that we don't like design of density? Because I think a lot of people think of the East Side of Santa Fe as the most iconic part of Santa Fe and as one of the densest parts of the city, you know? So I'm really looking forward to that conversation because I think it'll give us a chance to, one, have some commonality around these discussions that gets to more specificity, as you're saying, and two, to imagine together kind of like, what could it look like for us to create pockets of density or what some people sometimes call polycentric cities, where you have like the East Side is as a dense an area and downtown and the rail yards and Midtown potentially.
I was going to say, I live in the Midtown because we're just down from the high school. And you think about if Midtown is shops and and houses, what that would do. And if they go back to the reimagining St. Mike's work that they did, you know, gosh, it's been a decade or more now. That was incredible because it had trees instead of parking lots and, you know, protected bike lanes, just drawn bike lanes. It had a lot of really important work that was done. And that would make where I live much nicer.
Yeah, we have a lot of opportunity to re-engineer. I mean, we have designed around the car now for at least 60 years, so we're going to have to back ourselves into some things. But there's a lot of opportunity. If we have roads that we don't, like St. Mike's, you don't need as many lanes as we have. So the Remike is a great way of thinking about how we could make that a more pedestrian and bike-friendly area. Or like we were talking about earlier, how we could start to absorb some of the large parking lots and create more housing and mixed-use developments in those areas. You know, it's going to take a lot of vision and it's going to take changes to our rules. Because the reality is, if today a developer wanted to develop the East Side, they couldn't. It would be illegal.
No. When I first got my job, somebody from, I think, the old Historic Santa Fe Association, very nice person, came to talk to me because the association was mad because they put an electric box on the plaza, which was, they did it illegally. They snuck it in and totally was wrong. And they hated it and they wanted it gone. And I said, well, how would you have electricity for Indian Market? And, well, you know, they need to do it underground. They need to do this. They need to do that. And I said, that would cost $250,000. And that's just a waste of money. It's done. And I said, put a fence around it. And, you know, she's like, you don't understand. I said, my favorite buildings in Santa Fe do not comply with anything. With your code, we don't have a cathedral. We don't have the big pink building.
Yes.
And what do we do?
Yeah, exactly. And that's another conversation we're going to engage in August. We're going to talk about what we mean when we mean when we talk about cultural preservation and keeping Santa Fe, Santa Fe.
Yeah.
We'll be with the author of Myth of Santa Fe and a panel alongside him, which I think will be a lot of fun because, you know, when we set about to create this sense of Santa Fe as the city different, you know, that was in its own way a kind of creation of a sense of place. Yeah. And I think we have the opportunity to do that again. Like, what do we care about? What makes this place feel like home to us?
Yeah, I mean, would we go to the plaza and take off the faux stucco and
reveal
the actual buildings that are there? I've always thought that would be so awesome. And it's
That's
like
a great conceptual art project.
You know, I told this person at the time we were having a fight on the plaza. I said, I want to go back to corn on the plaza and lots of donkeys, which I guess we had last weekend. But, you know, what is historic?
Yeah, what's historic. Exactly. You know? And I think something that we talk about a lot is it's not just buildings that make a place you know, give it a sense of place. It's the pattern of the land use. So the east side is not just the adobe buildings, but it's the fact that the streets are really narrow. But even more importantly, maybe it's the people, right? It's the culture bearers that have created a sense of place here and everywhere else.
And none of those culture bearers live on the east side. So you could argue that we've lost it anyway, even if it looks nice.
That's right. Like, we have to think about preserving all of those things. We can't just take one part of it.
Yeah, the culture bearers are now in Bellamy.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I remember interviewing Eddie Ortiz, the former school superintendent, and I guess his grandma's house was bought by Laura Gilpin.
Oh, really?
So talk about, you know, a great cultural thing, but his family didn't live there anymore.
Yeah.
And it's you know, the people who were smart enough to stay or who were wise enough to understand that what they had was so precious.
Yes.
Is one of those kind of interesting, just, you know, contradictions in the world. Like, I get a new house, but no, this old house with the mud falling on my roof, you know, or the dirt coming out of the ceiling is better.
Yeah.
And we didn't always know that.
That's right. I think that's really a big part of the reason why HOMAs exist, because we want to give people the option to choose, right? Yeah. Like, you could choose to sell your house, but you should be able to have that choice whether you want to leave or not, rather than you have to leave because you can't afford your rent.
Yeah, no. And I know the time when we bought our house, houses were going up. And it was still, you could get a house under $200,000. Yeah. So it's a completely different world. But I remember telling my husband, if we don't hurry, we will never get on this wagon because it's going too fast.
Yep.
And we didn't have any money, no family to, you know, loan us a bunch or whatever.
Yep.
And we were able to buy a house with very little down because it was still legal back then.
Yep.
And in a year and a half, we were able to refinance to get the 20% gone. That's how fast it went up that time. And that is nothing compared to today.
That's incredible.
And I just think no one should be that anxious about where they live.
No, that's right. I mean, we really, I think, really our vision here with this series is to try to push a community conversation that is not about particular projects, but is really about values and is really about vision and is about systemic change and allows us to work together to create policies that are going to make sure that we're creating a Santa Fe for everybody, not just for people that can.
How do you have a conversation with people who are beautiful, well-meaning, kind, you know, obviously very liberal, who then say, but we moved here for this and we want this?
Yeah. You know, I do think that that's such a common conversation. I really care about affordable housing, just not here. I've heard that a lot of times, right? And I think what's real is, like, I understand that this is all about trade-offs. So for someone who lives next to, say, Los Prados, there may be a feeling of loss and, you know, they can't walk their dog on 22 acres of land anymore, or they won't be able to at some point. But I think that for me, when I try to have these conversations with folks, I try to center the idea of equity, because it's like, we live in a community, we live together, and therefore we have to accept the trade-offs that come with living together. And I respect that you feel a sense of loss around this. I think you might be under-anticipating the gain. There's going to be a beautiful 5-acre park next to you. You might really love that. But it's also about remembering that there are other people. While you may not have this place to walk your dog, for example, there are people right now who are living doubled up in a trailer right next door to you in the country club, for example, because they can't afford to live in their own home. So to me, it's really about trying to broaden people's perspectives beyond just, like, what is your possible loss, to what is the gain that other people that we live with might have or will have as a result of this. And how do we draw our circles wider than just ourselves or our family? How do we continuously think, you know, I live with these other people, and therefore I have to value what's important to them too.
I love that. And on that note, this has been another Conversations Different. We'll be back next week.